Save big money on your summer project at Menards. Transform your garage with rock-solid floor coatings. Complete your project with a showroom-quality finish in 1 weekend. A one-car kit covers up to 250 square feet. Get everything you need to complete your project with rock-solid floor coatings. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Welcome along, glad to have you company for the final D Word of 2024, and a chance to look back on a few of the guests we've had on the show throughout the year, which also saw us reach 250 shows since we started in 2019. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Marty Schreiber, Kate Lee, Sean Reeves, Peter Berry and Deb Bunt, Nikki Jardin and Manny Singh Kang. Well, first off, I don't often get the chance to talk to a former US state governor. So when the opportunity came to chat to former Wisconsin Governor Marty Schreiber about his book, My Two Elaines, it was one I just couldn't refuse.
Well, first of all, good morning and a pleasure to be with you, Pete. Thank you very much. A little bit about myself. Well, I just turned my 85th birthday, which was a nice thing to do, to always remain in my predeceased stage for as long of a period as possible. And I wrote a book called My Two Elaines. And the first Elaine was this wonderful young girl I met when I was a freshman in high school. And I fell in love with her immediately. And then we dated, we went steady, we got engaged, we got married, and 4 children, 13 grandchildren. Now 9 great-grandchildren, my friend, my advisor, my companion, everything that you could ever want in a life's partner. Well, when she was in her mid-60s, she began to get lost going to and from places she had been going to and from for the last 10 years. She was a marvelous cook, and sometimes she would mess up her recipes so badly she would cry. So that was the beginning of the second Elaine. So I've had a chance to love two Elaines, but two different people. And it was that onset then of Alzheimer's that we noticed in the mid-60s, and then the diagnosis. And then as things moved forward, what happened was, because I didn't understand this disease, I thought I could beat it, you know. I thought I could master it. I'm the man, you know. We don't ask for directions and so forth. And so what happened was, my main stubbornness in trying to beat this disease deprived Elaine and myself really of moments of joy and of things that we could have had better. And so one thing I learned, if there's one thing worse than Alzheimer's, it's ignorance of the disease. And then learning more about the disease, I learned how important it was to embrace the person who now is, to join their world, and to try and let go of this person who once was, because it will never happen again. So that's a very dire, dire prognosis, hopeless, until you think a little bit. And that is, what is there about in life that we have to remember to do? And that is, if things happen that we don't like, we can yell and we can scream and it can revolt. Or we can step back and we can say to ourselves, how can we focus on making things better? And that then becomes a very realizable goal for caregivers, to help their loved one live their best life possible. And within that framework, then, to have the goal of helping our loved one live their best life possible, one significant ingredient of that is to make sure that we caregivers live our best life possible. Because if we don't, we are depriving our loved one of a lifeline to help them as they go through this horrible experience of realizing they're losing their memory, the uncertainties are lying ahead, what's going to happen. I don't remember anything. I do remember some things, and I get yelled at because I ask the question too many times in a row, and so forth. So anyway, that's a sort of a background on why you and I are together. And it's my goal to help other caregivers understand the disease a little bit better, not from the standpoint of the scientific aspects, but from the standpoint of the practicality of it all. How do we help our loved one live through one of the worst diagnoses that is possible? And so that's why we're here. And I guess in summary, I wrote the book, My Two Elaines. I wrote it, it's sort of from the standpoint of is I took this trail, this mountainous trail, and I've been up to there and back again, and it's exhausting, it's terrible. And now I see you starting out on the same trail. And I would say, please sit down and talk with me for a minute or so. Just please listen, do what you want to do, but at least gain from some of my experiences, and maybe your journey can be easier and better for you and also for your loved one.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Now, one of the more controversial moments of 2024 came when the Alzheimer's Society released their latest advertising campaign, which saw a son describe how his mother had died multiple times due to her dementia. This was a view of Alzheimer's Society Chief Executive Kate Lee on the campaign.
Yeah, like, you know, there's a real balance here, isn't there? And I think some people felt perhaps at the beginning that the balance had gone too far because they didn't have your logical explanation that you've just given us of where it's all coming from. And I guess it's very difficult because if you give that logical explanation at the beginning, it kind of removes some of the impact that the ad might have. So you're almost sort of devil in deep blue sea there, I guess.
I think that describes the entire advert, Devil of the Deep Blue Sea, I think. Oh my goodness. It has been challenging. What I have said openly and publicly is that we know also this advert was very upsetting for some people, and certainly some people who have been early diagnosed, and for you know, numbers of people around the UK that are living really well with their dementia, and I work with many of them every day, and I find them deeply motivating and inspiring. You know, they're incredible folks. And I, you know, we never set this advert up to hurt them. And I know that we have caused some hurt and upset, and I have apologized to people for that, you know, and I would never hurt people. You know, I look at my own mum in her situation and I really get it. But equally, I can't live with dementia being the current state it is in the UK, in the our consideration of it, the level and lack of priority for dementia. You know, nothing's going to change if we keep doing what we've always done. And I am a bit of an activist. I am a rebel. I think those that work closely with me know that I want change, and I'm in a position, a privileged position, to drive it. And I'm going to change some things, and we won't get everything right, and sometimes we will, sometimes we won't. The advert, the initial reports on the advert look like it's been very successful in changing public opinion, which we obviously wanted to do, but more about that in the coming weeks and months.
Alzheimer's Society Chief Executive Kate Lee. Now, October saw us reach the 250 show mark, and I was delighted to be able to celebrate with my favourite double act, Peter Berry and Deb Bunt.
Thank you very much, Pete. It's great to be here. And I never ever dreamed that I'd be compared to Ant and Dec and the two Ronnies. You know, fame at last. Here we go. Big time rolls on.
I think we'll have to work out a little bit later which one each of you want to be, but we'll...
Well, it's when he says Laurel and Hardy, I start to panic.
Yeah, okay. Actually, I missed them out, didn't I? That's very remiss of me. You know what? We first talked on the D word back in October 2020 when it was a very young radio show. And so much has happened for, you know, both of you and actually for the show as well since then. I mean, if I can start with you, Peter, and, you know, start with the obvious question. It's great to speak to you. And how are you?
I think I'm OK. I mean, how can I put this? From the eyebrows down, everything works very well. It's just the eyebrows up, things are not going quite so good. But I'm okay. I have lots of people support me. I manage to keep very active. I know, or I'm fairly confident, that my memory is a lot worse or getting worse. But at the end of the day, I tend to focus on all the things I can do, and I'm not too worried about the things I can't do. So yeah, physically, I'm fit and healthy, and living as well as I can.
You know, with that change in your memory, are you kind of aware that there is more support in areas that you now need that maybe you didn't before?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I'm definitely needing a lot more. Yeah, and we're going to call it support because it is support. It's not, how can I put, support at a very high level. It's just people changing the way that they approach me in conversation and the way that they do things in their everyday lives just to fit and keep me in the loop. And they're quite, I think, quite simple little things for people to do, but that support has become more over the last, I'm going to say, is that what, 18 months, Deb, am I right? As she is nodding for the radio. So that support is getting more, but I still think that I'm living well, and I still think that I'm able to achieve all the things within reason that I aim for anyway.
Yeah, and that's you know, that's really important and great. And you know, when I first talked to you, you had the concept of your dementia monster, and that if you could end each day with Peter 1, dementia monster 0, then it had been a good day. I mean, is that something you're still sticking to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still something that I have in my head, and it's still something that I try and, because this condition is not anything that I can see or physically get a hold of, not like a broken leg or a broken finger or having a thorn in your finger, but making the monster and creating him it gives me, I suppose, a bit of an outlet. It gives me something physical to try and mend and to try and deal with. And I'm still battling against him. As he gets a little bigger and a little greener and a little more snottier and a little horribler, I have to, is horrible a word?
Yeah,
thanks. I have to sort of become stronger and battle against him more, which I think can be tiring, but it also is a good thing because I'm a stubborn old devil and I don't like losing to my monster. So it keeps me on my toes.
And if I can turn to you, Deb, I mean, you know, the changes that Peter said about in his memory, etc. And also a really important thing I think you just said, that, you know, it's not like a broken arm. You can't see it. But, you know, obviously you are in a position to perceive those changes.
Yes, and it would be wrong to say I haven't noticed there have been changes. But like Peter said, it's incumbent on me to adapt. So a couple of really simple things I do to support him. If he sends me a WhatsApp message, I put a very specific tone on my phone. It's a tone of a clown, actually. But when that clown tone goes off, I know answer him straight away, because if I don't, here forget what the question was, and that must be frustrating.
Could you not found a more appropriate
No, I thought that was entirely appropriate.
I mean, what's that all about?
It makes me laugh.
Does it indeed?
And I think Peter said as well about adapting, so he's kept in the conversation, so he doesn't lose a thread. So I've learnt, I think, to do little summaries as we go along, so he knows what we're talking about, just so he's not excluded. When he cycles in to see me, we've done a series of notes for his bike, which are laminated, so he can put the appropriate note on his bike and hopefully take it off when he goes home, otherwise he'd be going around in a big circle. So little things to accommodate that memory change, and there has been a change. Peter often said that I have to enter his world. He can't enter mine. So entering that world of change is what I have to do and what I will do to maintain the friendship. Because however frustrating it might be for me, to maybe to repeat things, it must be much more frustrating for Pete.
Dementia is a little bit of a revolving door that only revolves one way. We can't get out, so people have to revolve in. It's as simple as that, really.
Former Emmerdale and Coronation Street actor Sean Reeves, who joined me to talk amongst other things about Remember This, an EP she recorded at the famous Abbey Road Studios to raise money for the Alzheimer's Society. And that was Someone to Watch Over Me. 2024 was also the year Mirador magazine came to the UK. It'd been established in the US when founder Nikki Jardine was looking for something to occupy her aunt.
So Mirador actually started back in 2017. And, the thought for it was actually called something different than it was called Evergreen. That was the initial thought. But that got tossed out pretty quickly because there are three other magazines in the area with that name. So I came up with Mirador later, but the concept was really came about because I had been caring for my aunt who was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's at the age of 62 at young onset. And I became her primary family care partner. And she moved down close to me and I would see her frequently. She was in long-term care at an apartment residence, and I would spend several times a week with her in those early days. And one of the things that I noticed straight off was that she stopped reading, and she was always a really big reader. She loved her magazines, she loved her newspapers, and I noticed that they were just sort of stacked up and not really getting leafed through anymore. She would often like to share stories with me. That had stopped happening. And then I noticed one day we were in the dining hall and she was having trouble reading the menu. Now, I didn't know anything about dementia other than I knew that it existed, but I didn't understand the disease. And as I was learning, I came across a woman named Tipa Snow, who I know is making the way across in the UK and has been over there several times. One of the most amazing dementia care experts out there. And she was arranging for a seminar in my area. So I live in Portland, Oregon. And I went to one of her talks. It was a all-day, 8-hour affair. And I learned a lot about how dementia affects the brain in that conference. And one of the things that I learned was that visual acuity is affected. So your peripheral vision starts to go, and then your vision becomes, binocular and monocular, and you can have aphasia with certain kinds of dementia. And so it occurred to me during that talk that my aunt wasn't reading because she had dementia. One of the things that was probably affecting her reading was that the things she was trying to read were not formatted specifically for a changing brain. And so I started researching that. And in fact, I came across the Deep Guide created in the UK, fantastic guide about how to create, create images or create pages that are easier to read for people with dementia. And it kind of started to spiral from there. I started looking around for dementia-friendly magazines and newspapers, because that's what she really liked to read. She wasn't really a book reader. I found a couple of books that had been formatted for people with dementia, but it wasn't really something she was interested in. And I was actually really surprised that there weren't magazines created for people living with this sort of brain change. I don't know why I was surprised. I mean, in the States, there's millions of people that have a dementia diagnosis. And so I figured this was a resource that was just a sort of a natural, but there wasn't. And so I actually have a freelance writing background. I was a freelance writer for a number of years. I was a managing editor for a small local magazine. And so it was a pretty natural fit to think, well, maybe if I get some help from some friends, I might be able to create something that my aunt would enjoy. And that sort of was the beginning of that. And so in early 2018, I had the luck of a dear friend, and I played music with this person also. And she had designed all the graphics for our posters. And I thought, well, I know that Tave can help create the design for this. And then I brought in another graphic designer friend who I'd worked with on a previous magazine. And the three of us got together and spent about a year and a half putting together that first issue.
So it was, you're kind of kindred spirit, I think, because back in 2019, I looked for a radio show about dementia, and Laurie LeBay, who I know you've spoken to a bar, I couldn't find anything either. And so decided to set out on the D word. I mean, but it's quite a big thing. As I know, you have a really good idea, but turning that good idea into something practical and something, in your case, physical, a magazine, is, that's quite a thing to set out on.
It definitely was daunting. I mean, the print industry isn't necessarily at the top of its game right now, as we know, although there is a resurgence happening with magazines, I feel like, especially with the younger generation, they seem to really like them. That task, at that time I was caring for my aunt. I was working full time. I was actually a letter carrier for the Postal Service. And so I was pretty busy in doing all of that. And so the thought of like trying to come up with, resources and the time to really put this together was difficult. So, we kind of worked on it here and there. And then, blammo, COVID hit. And so, I lost a couple of my jobs and stopped playing music. And so had time to really, really tuck in and start working on it in earnest and put together some prototype pages. And we took them to where my aunt was living at her residential community. And we took them to some dementia care experts that we knew and sort of started putting together these pages and how to best, create that first issue. And so it was a little daunting, but it was definitely a pretty fun project, honestly, to work on, and felt like the right thing, maybe not necessarily in a business sense, but in a practical sense, to create something without any any rails, really, because nothing really like it existed. As creating a radio show that doesn't have a necessarily that you haven't found an audience for, where do you start? And I guess, like most things, you start from the beginning and hope for the best.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Our final look back is to June, when I had the great pleasure of talking to Fundraiser of the Year, Manny Singh Gang. There are so many people out there that are fundraising, so you need a bit of a quirky story. And I've got to say, you're the king of the quirky story when it comes to the fundraising.
You know what? There's a saying that we sort of have in our text that talks about insanity or madness. Not in the literal term, but actually living outside the box of the normality we're in, and the way of the world has become that if you see something unusual, it's going to attract people's attention. Now, as a Sikh, I've got this long beard and I wear a turban. When I'm going to the Wolves games, I've got a brightly coloured turban that's like standing out. And that's actually a feature of our faith, because this uniform was given to us to actually stand out in the community. 500 years ago, you know, we were seen as like the beacon in the community that people could approach if they needed help. And we had to have a recognizable aura about us. So this is where, you know, when I wore the same colors as the kit, I got a little bit of recognition. People started following me. And then it was, oh, what can we do then? We've got to try and attract the attention of as many people as possible. So yeah, I started off with a bit of cycling. You know, I went to an away game at Liverpool and did a few 100-mile bike rides, and then the running started, a few half marathons, and you know, done London Marathon now 4 times. But even then, you're thinking, oh, what else can we do? And then the walking started. You know, and the walking has become, I don't even like walking, I'm not going to lie. I'm not even a serial, but it just captured the people's imaginations. And that walk to London, especially for Chelsea away, in just, I mean, there's lots of people who are doing walks, but I attempted it in just over 2 days, you know, and walking 60 miles on the first day to Banbury from Wolverhampton. It's just, oh, unthinkable. But yeah, it does attract more attention. And that's what it's about. You know, Dementia UK got their name on the walk to Newcastle that I did, Newcastle upon Tyne. I think Dementia UK had their name shared on social media more times than ever in its history. So, you know, that was people of stature, people of platform, people, news channels sharing that name, and even more than the money raised. That's really important, because that inspires others to also fundraise and also help, or to get help from that charity. So that part of fundraising can never be measured, and that's a really important part for me, is like trying to inspire a generation of people to try and take up helping others, whatever the cause is, whatever the charity is.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think I first saw you at a football match on the TV, and I suddenly looked and thought, who is that guy? And then I learned your story, and that's how we've met in terms of getting you on the radio show. So it certainly worked. I mean, talking of, you know, inspiring the other generation, I mean, your son's been involved with the walking as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the whole family, it's a family network. So my son joined me for a walk, but I think the project, you call it, that we sort of launched a few years ago, called Samosa Saturday, is the one that really embodied community spirit. So we were sort of going to do a bucket collection before a game, but in our ethos, we don't really actually like asking for money, and it's down to the giver if they would like to give. So do something and let the giver give. Don't actually actively go out and say, please, can I have your, you know. So we came up with the samosa, you know, a delicious Indian Punjabi snack. And we thought we could serve samosas, and if anybody would like to donate, they could. And that has just took off. The whole family's involved in making them, you know, from nieces and aunties and, you know, my parents, everybody gets involved for the whole week. We've now, you know, we've done 21 events over 6 years, I think it is. And, you know, over 50,000 samosas. It's become huge. Even in lockdown, we actually carried on with the rules that allowed us to do deliveries. And we had delivery drivers, you know, who were Wolves fans, who came to my house, collected their bags that were pre-packed by us and delivered to people who had pre-ordered all over the Midlands, like from Worcester to Stoke. And it became a huge community event. I think we've got about 20 volunteers who help us. Previously, I never knew any of them. And also lots and lots of children, really young children who've grown in the last 6 years. We've got a couple of girls, Emily and Chloe, with their father. They've been attending since day one. And they've gone, they're in secondary school now, but they've carried on. And you can see the inspiration they've gained from it as well. So, you know, that embodied teamwork, community, people together, you know, people who normally may not speak to each other coming together for a great cause. And we've had like players, you know, Wolves players and managers, staff, you know, celebrities like Wolverhampton celebrities like Beverly Knight and Susie Perry order samosas off us. So it's become a real, you know, I'm sort of known as, you know, Samosa Manny, or, you know, many different names people give me. So yeah, that event on its own is just bewildering. I just sort of stand back and look at it now because there's so many people involved in it and so many people who help out. And that gives me more pride than even like the money we raise.
My thanks to Marty, Kate, Peter, Deb, Nikki, Sean and Manny, and all the other great guests from around the world I've had the privilege to talk to throughout the year. Also, a special thank you to my production assistant, Angela, who works so hard to keep me on track, and that's not always easy. And of course, thanks to everyone who's listened, making the D Word such a success. Have a peaceful and a happy new year, and here's the More Dementia Talk in 2025.